The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Tommy's here. I am here. The show's presenting sponsor, as always, is Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com for a free, no-obligation, in-home estimate. If you missed Cooley on the show yesterday, he did a film breakdown of Drake May, Caleb Williams, and then gave you his four quarterbacks that he's done in order of preference. So that was yesterday's show. We're 2.5 days and counting until the draft, but I'm just going to start with this because I am sure that my good friend Tom Lavero was watching some NBA playoff action last night. I'm sure you weren't, but god damn were these two good games last night. I mean, the Lakers-Nuggets game last night, Tommy, this is a gift to you. Like, for Nikola Jokic, just asking you to give it a shot for a couple of games and watch Denver, you'd come back, you wouldn't thank me, because you'd act very much like, it was okay, but you would enjoy it more than you would think you would. It was a phenomenal basketball game last night.
I've watched Jokic. I watched him last year in the playoffs. But I wasn't going to – I'm not going to jump on the NBA playoffs right out of the gate.
Why?
You know?
Why?
Because they're not – because I don't like the game itself. I might like one or two players, you know, but I don't like – it's still just shooting.
No,
it's a lot of good shooting.
How would you know?
I know, with Jokic.
How would you know?
Not.
You don't watch.
I watch enough. Watch enough of the Wizards this year to know what it's like.
It's not like that. Nothing you're watching in the playoffs is like that.
Okay. I will watch the playoffs, but I'm not jumping on. I'm not watching 5 weeks of NBA playoffs unless I'm being punished.
So I'm going to admit something to you today. I last night sat there. First of all, my wife was like, please turn that off. And I should have stayed downstairs to watch it. But I was tired after the first half of the Nuggets-Lakers game, and I wanted to lie down in my own bed and watch it. And the TV was off when I came upstairs, and I turned it on, which is rather rude, I would admit.
Yes.
But I did not turn the volume up that high. But the problem was, two of my three boys were watching this game, and we're texting back and forth, and then we were calling each other, because it was truly one of the better playoff games I've seen in years. And I'm talking about the Lakers-Nuggets game. But let me just admit something to you and to my listeners who are basketball fans, but primarily college basketball fans. Maryland basketball, for me, is my number one, okay? It is, in recent years, supplanted, you know, the Redskins slash football team slash Commanders. Look, they're still right there, and I'm getting back into it in a much bigger way, as many of you have realized. But the NBA is so much better than college basketball now. the drama of these playoff games is much better than anything in the regular season in college, and I think anything in the tournament, personally. And the quality of the play, the level of play, it's, you know, it's varsity versus ninth grade, you know, freshman team in terms of the difference. And I've said this to you for years, not that you don't know this, but it's not, it's a totally different product in the playoffs. It's just completely different. It's played with a level of intensity that they never reach during the regular season. It's played with a defensiveness about it and a physicality, if that's a word, that you never get in the regular season. It's even officiated differently in the postseason. You get sold out, raucous environments. I mean, Madison Square Garden, Tommy, you've been to a playoff game in Madison Square Garden. I've actually been to one playoff game in Madison Square Garden. That place was roaring from start to finish. Denver's home crowd is amazing. By the way, as I'm saying, as I'm admitting to you that I, as far as basketball goes, the NBA playoffs now are my number two to Maryland games. But it's so much better than college basketball. I would have never said that 10 years ago. Probably not even 5 years ago. It's just not even close. And then the other part of this is that, my God, the Wizards have missed out. You've pointed it out so many times. You know, they missed out on the, you know, the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson.
Magic Bird.
Yeah, Magic Bird, Jordan era, LeBron, you know, the Spurs and Duncan
Shaq
era.
And Kobe.
Shaq and Kobe and LeBron era. I mean, there were a couple of
teams.
And they're
about to miss out on the LeBron Jr. era.
Well, I don't know about that. Speaking of him, and I've said this to you a couple of times this year when we've taken the risk to talk about NBA for just a minute or two, hoping that we don't lose all of our listeners, LeBron's better than he's ever been. LeBron is a much better shooter than he's ever been. And I think he's a more skilled player than he's ever been at 39 years old. He took the game over for the Lakers down the stretch while Jamal Murray and Jokic took it over for Denver. It was really just such a high-level game, and the kind of high-level game that I prefer, which is not iso ball, both ends, you know, two-man basketball consistently. You get, you know, these are two pretty well-coached teams with high IQ players. But LeBron, he hit shots last night. He had a steal and a breakaway dunk. He had a block in the first half.
Saw the block.
He's a better player this year than he's been in recent years. He may not be an all-around better player than he was, I don't know, the year that they won it with Cleveland, with him and Kyrie, or some of those Miami years, but I actually think he's a more skilled player, specifically a better shooter than he's ever been. And
I'm not going to argue with you. I don't watch him enough to make the case one way or the other about that. But I think it is worth considering that he's 39 years old and you think he's playing the best basketball he ever has. Could speak to the quality of defense in the league as much as anything.
Not in a playoff game, though. I mean, you know, the Denver Nuggets guard and every possession is a battle. It was really, you know, Barkley and Kenny Smith and Shaq and Ernie on the TNT show.
I know, they said it was the best doubleheader they've ever had.
Yeah, they said it right afterwards, and literally I was texting with a couple of people, including two of my sons, and I'm like, that may have been the best back-to-back night of NBA basketball we've seen in a long time. And it kind of needed it because the first weekend was a bit of a snoozer. Pretty much every game was a blowout. But man, Tommy Jokic, Jesus God, 27, 20, and 10. I don't know why the Lakers tried to guard him with Anthony Davis at the end. Davis was in foul trouble. The Lakers were running out of gas a little bit, you know, at 5,280 feet. And he's just not guardable by one person. Like, that is not a good choice. But, you know, you pick your poison because he's such a great passer.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's a remarkable player, and one of the many things I like about him, he flies in the face of your evolution theory that you like to expound upon, that players are bigger, stronger, faster.
Yeah, he's pretty strong.
None of those.
He's pretty strong. He is really strong at 290
you know what
pounds.
What? That beer keg strength. That's what he's got.
No, Tommy. He's 6'11", 7 feet, and 290 pounds. He's pretty strong.
I know that.
But you're right. He's not like athletic. He's not a jumper.
No.
He's not a leaper. He's not.
Yeah.
But he does lead a fast break pretty skillfully. You may have seen this, but it's his fourth playoff game of at least 25 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists. And next in line is Wilt with 2 and Kareem with 1. He's got 4.
I did see that.
He's 29 years old.
That's stunning. It really is. Really is amazing. It's a shame he plays in Denver.
They have great fans. Their fans,
yeah, they do.
They really are awesome. Like, think about the Bronco fans. They've always been great. I don't know about the Colorado Rocky fans or the Avalanche fans, but the best part of last night too, and it's part of the drama of postseason and big games, is, you know, you got to have some controversy mixed in, and there were some definite questionable misses of calls and calls themselves in both games. You know, Josh Harris's team, the 76ers, they filed a grievance after the game saying that
both games, they're protesting both games.
It's not an official protest, I don't think. It's a grievance, I think it was the way it was described, about the officiating in game one and game two. The end of the game in New York was incredible. I don't know, it was great. And I definitely have come around. And I think among my friend group, I'm definitely on an island by myself. Most of my friends are into college basketball. They don't watch a lot of NBA. A couple of my friends do, but I think the NBA playoffs are just an incredible product. And you get this night in and night out for the next 40 or so nights, because it lasts a while. And the other thing I was thinking, Tommy, last night is, God, it's not that the draft hasn't helped us, and I'm appreciative of this draft and the content that it's allowed us to, you know, provide, because there's, as we both know, a massive audience for it. But 65% of the players' names that get announced on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night will never be anything in the NFL, and they'll be out of the league within 4 years. 2 out of the 10 names might be major contributors. It's just different from games. I like games, and I like talking about games. The problem is you can't do that when you're in an NFL town for too long. Including the Caps, who have a playoff game tonight against the Rangers. We'll talk about that a little bit.
I watched the Caps on Sunday.
I did too. What did you think?
Yeah, I watched them. I watched them at Shelley's back room. I was at Nats Park on Sunday.
God, you get around. You get around, man. Nats Park, Shelley's, games.
Where that kid, Mitchell Parker, pitched on Saturday, and he was out of sight. And then I went to Shelley's to watch the Caps game after that.
Tell me first about Mitchell Parker, this left-hander who's got like a 1.50 or something ERA in 2 starts.
Well, I'm going to give Charlie and Dave credit for this, and they probably aren't the first ones to say it, but it's the first ones I've heard, because it's only the second time he took the mound for the Nats. Because I was listening to them on the way from the ballpark to Shelley's, and they're so great. They really are a great radio team. And they brought up the possibility that batters may not be able to pick up the ball coming out of Parker's hands because his delivery is a little bit funky. He throws his arm way back. And, I mean, batters look to spot the ball like the minute it leaves a pitcher's hand. And they may not be able to pick it up quick enough for Parker. Now he has tremendous control. That has nothing to do with his control. His control has been outstanding. But their ability to hit what he's throwing could be a factor in the way his delivery is. I know Sid Fernandez for the Mets made a career out of having a delivery where batters could not pick up the ball in time to do something about it.
Yeah, I'm looking.
And that may be his.
I'm watching his delivery. I haven't seen either of the two games that he pitched, so I'm watching it right now. That's interesting. But just tell me about him, because there wasn't any conversation or not much of it before the season started.
No, although I remember Rizzo telling me at spring training that they really liked him among the young pitchers that they were counting on, about Irvin and Mackenzie Gore and him. And he faced the Dodgers and the Astros, two good-hitting teams with players like Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and Jose Altuve, and they couldn't do anything with him. So, yeah. Look, the Nationals have been getting some very good pitching, and they're going to have a decision to make when Josiah Gray comes off the injured list as to whether or not, you know, they go with a rotation of Mackenzie Gore and Williams, Trevor Williams and Parker and Gray and Irvin, and just take Corbin out of rotation because he's been a disaster.
I'm sitting here watching his highlights. He struck Altuve out twice. He struck out Alvarez, and they're just looking back at him like, where did you come from?
Yeah.
But are you saying because the delivery's hard to pick up because he reaches back with it? Yeah, I see what you're talking about.
I'm guessing that. Look, I'm just spitballing here.
No, but Dave is a really good analyst. Like, I think he's excellent. They've won three out of their last four series, and the teams they've beaten, Houston, the Dodgers, and was it the Giants? I think it may have been the Giants.
Yes.
And they lost, of course, two of three to the lowly A's. But they play the Dodgers for the next three. But I kind of can't wait to see this guy Parker's next start. When is it?
Yeah.
Let me look.
I don't know.
Miami Saturday.
They're scoring a lot of runs.
No. At Miami Saturday. C.J. Abrams is playing
great.
Oh,
yeah. J. Abrams is an all-star.
Lane Thomas has a bunch of stolen
bases.
And Luis
Garcia?
Too. Yeah.
Luis Garcia, who, you know, they're not really crazy about, you know, because he makes so many mental mistakes, but he's hitting over 300 for them. He's been really good for them lately. They've been getting some timely hitting from some guys. Meanwhile, their star, their offensive stud, James Wood, is still down at Triple-A, tearing it up down there.
Tearing it up.
At some point, I think maybe in May, we'll see him come up. And it could be an interesting season. They play in a division with the Braves and the Phillies.
That's the problem.
The Mets are playing well, so it's tough. But they're getting much better pitching than I thought they would this year.
They're second.
But they may just have to banish Corbin to the bullpen.
They're second in the bigs in stolen bases. They've got 38 in 21 games, one behind Cincinnati, who's actually played one more game. That was the thing that I was looking, because I'm like, every game it seems like they've just got multiple dudes stealing bases. It's been a very encouraging start for the Nationals.
Yes, it has.
And like you said, the problem is Atlanta and Philadelphia in the division. So we started the Nats conversation off by you saying that you went to Shelley's after the baseball game to watch the hockey game They lost game one. They play game two tonight in Madison Square Garden. So, Mr. Hockey, Mr. Puckhead, what did you think of game one?
Well, I mean, they can't seem... I didn't watch the Caps a lot this year. I read about them from time to time. I didn't watch them maybe, I don't know, maybe six times this year. But they were better at the end, at the final week, than they were most of the time that I watched them. But they can't generate offense, any offense. They can't score.
Tommy,
they can't keep up with the Rangers offensively.
You know what they're missing? They're missing a lot of traffic around the net.
I was trying not to do that.
I was expecting that's what you were going to say, and I was going to say, of course you'd say that. I mean, for years when I would say, Tommy, what was the problem last night with the Caps? They just did not generate enough traffic around the net. Like, you heard that one time, and that was your go-to if they didn't score enough goals.
Well, you know what? Because the year they went to the Stanley Cup Finals but didn't win it, they did generate traffic around the net. That's how they got that far.
Against the Red Wings?
They had a couple of players that were willing to do the dirty work, you know, in front of the net, and they just don't have the talent. You know, they're just overmatched talent-wise.
Yeah, look,
right now, you know, it's they got to win tonight. Got to win.
Well, they don't have to, but they're not going to be eliminated
if they lose.
But I see,
yeah, they do. If I think the NHL is going to call the series to an end if they don't win tonight.
My go-to over the years, and I would say this about Sunday's game because I did watch Sunday's game, is the other team just skates a lot faster. They just got faster skaters. And they've got bigger dudes. The guy that scored Rempe early, my God. I had to look it up to see how big he was when I saw him. He's 6'8". But there was a game last night in the NHL playoffs. The NHL playoffs are awesome. The Islanders had a 3-1 lead against Carolina. Carolina's the favored team. They have home ice advantage. They won game one, and the Islanders were up 3-1 at the end of the second period. And with 2.5 minutes to go in the game, they were up 3-2. And they gave up 3 goals over the final 2.5 minutes of the game.
Wow.
It was actually, in real time, it was 1 minute and 49 seconds of game, not real time, of game clock time. The Carolina Hurricanes scored 3 goals to win 5-3. I just saw the highlights of that this morning. They certainly have to get themselves into a position where they're not behind. I know enough about the Caps this year. They don't have the kind of firepower where if they're down by 2 or 3 goals, they're going to come back. You know, and so far in the NHL playoffs, there hasn't been one overtime game in the first 3 days of the NHL playoffs, but there have been some big goal-scoring games. The first day or the second day of the postseason, there was a 7-6 game. I think it was Winnipeg beat somebody 7-6. Last night, Connor McDavid's, you know, Edmonton team scored 7 goals. So there's some teams that can really score. I know those teams are Edmonton's not in their conference. But anyway, any more puck talk?
I got nothing for you, boy. We went around the horn to open the show, didn't we?
Did we hurt?
NBA,
did we hurt
baseball?
Anybody? Did we hurt ourselves?
I don't think we did. Today, I think we managed to keep our heads above water.
The Rangers, they generate more traffic around the net and they skate faster. That's the analysis. I will be watching tonight, though. I like the NHL playoffs, and I will be too. I want to see Ovechkin at least get a shot on goal. He did not have a shot on goal in game one. But it does look like the Rangers are much better. I didn't think that, by the way, at the end of the first period. I thought Lindgren was, Tommy, standing on his head in the first period of that game.
Well, he was.
Yeah. All right, let's talk some...
He was. It was only like a two-minute period where everything kind of fell apart.
Right.
Where they gave up 2 goals, you know? I mean, the rest of the game, they played them tight.
They did indeed. All right, let's get to some football right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Hey guys, if you're looking for a fun way to play daily fantasy sports, Prize Picks is the place to go to. I downloaded the Prize Picks app recently. It's exciting, it's easy, it's different when it comes to DFS. It's just you against the numbers. It's not you battling thousands of other players. It's picking more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections with odds. Like the other night, I had Caitlin Clark less than 33 points and less than 6 3-pointers. It paid 3-1. The NBA playoffs are coming up. The NHL playoffs are coming up. Prize Picks offers so many different opportunities on a nightly basis. Right now, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use my code Sheehan for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app. Download it today. Use my code Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more. Pick less. It's that easy. Hey guys, I want to tell you about Harry's. Many of you have probably heard of Harry's razors and shaving products, maybe even from this podcast. They've been an occasional advertiser over the years. I'm a customer. I have been for a while now. I think it goes back to the first shipment of product that they sent me before the first time they advertised on the pod, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. They found a way, Harry's did, to make a beautifully designed razor for a fraction of the price of other big brands. I've been using their Truman handle. It's a two-tone handle with a great grip. It provides a close shave no matter if you've got a beard and you're shaving around it, or if you cleanly shave on a daily basis. Their German-engineered blades stay sharp for a long period of time. They've got customizable delivery options for scheduled refills for as low as $2. That's half of what you pay other big brands. Right now, you can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/Sheehan. Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, and this is a no-risk trial. If you don't like your shave, no worries. It's on them. Convenient subscription options exist that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/Sheehan. That's harrys.com/SHEEHAN for a $3 trial set.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app.
Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This segment of the show brought to you by MyBookie. Go to mybookie.ag or mybookie.com. Use my promo code, KevinDC, and MyBookie will give you a cash bonus. They'll put free money into your account if you use my promo code on your initial deposit. They've got everything you need for the NFL draft. If you want to bet the NFL draft, think of anything you could want to bet on as it relates to the NFL draft. I bet you my bookie has it. How about this one? Number of quarterbacks taken in the first round. The over-under is 4.5. Now, it's pricey on the over. You got to pay -285. But if you go under 4.5, it's +212 on the comeback. Now, we've been talking about, Tom, the odds on players picked number two overall, and it's been kind of strange in that the odds this time last week, Jaden Daniels was a heavy favorite to be the number two overall pick. And then everything happened with the top 30 visit, the agent, you know, liking the tweets that were critical of Washington's top 30 visit format, etc. And the price came down significantly on Jaden Daniels, and the price went up on Drake May. I mean, it almost became an even odds situation on both of them at number two. Well, it has swung back in a big way. Jaden Daniels right now at MyBookie back to -370. That's the biggest favorite he has been at MyBookie to be the number two overall pick. Drake May's +330, and J.J. McCarthy is +1100. To be the number two overall pick. MyBookie's got everything you need for NFL draft betting, for NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball. Go to MyBookie.ag. Use my promo code, KevinDC. They'll give you a cash bonus on your initial deposit. Speaking of, because we haven't talked since last Wednesday, because I went away at the end of last week, we have not discussed, and I have no idea what you thought of a lot of what, you know, Keim referred to on the podcast the other day, all of the noise created by some of the criticism about the way Washington handled the top 30 day, and then the agent for Jaden Daniels liking tweets that were critical of the way Washington handled it. And then the PR agency for Jaden Daniels basically told the agent to sit down and shut up, and said Jaden will be thrilled to go anywhere he is drafted. What did you make of all of the noise last week?
Well, I mean, the agent, you can't make the leap and think that the agent is talking for the kid.
Why?
Okay. I just don't think there's not enough evidence to do that. There's no evidence to do that other than whatever you know about an agent-client relationship. Agents are not geniuses, okay? You know, they can be emotional. They can be stupid. They can do stupid things, okay? So I'm not going to sit here and say this is a red flag on Jason Daniels, but I just think kind of the whole reaction to the Topgolf thing is hilarious. You would have thought that Adam Peters took him to Larry Flynt's Hustlers Club. All this shit that they're catching over this thing. I had no problem with the way they did this. The agent, I guess, wants, you know, maybe there's an idea of preferential treatment, or, you know, thought there was going to be more one-on-one treatment. Maybe Daniels complained to him and he was, you know, responding to that, but we don't know. So I'm not going to hold this against the kid in any way, shape, or form. As you know, I'm familiar with the PR person who then, you know, shut the agent down.
Oh, that's right. But, that was her.
Yes, that was her.
Yeah.
That was her who attacked me for my column that I wrote about Jaden Daniels' mother and her role, particularly in Arizona State, in his career. By the way, this week, I think, the ruling came down that Herm Edwards is banned from working, I think, in college football for the next 4 or 5 years because of that scandal that his mom was in the middle of at Arizona State. But
can we talk about the PR person reaching out to you? You've already introduced it into the conversation, and people
are... Yeah, why not?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'll let you tell the story.
Because
we decided not to talk about this after it happened like a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago, but it seems like you're ready to talk about it, so go ahead.
Yeah, I wrote the column about his mother's influence early in his college career. Not just her involvement in the allegations that she bought tickets for recruits, plane tickets for recruits at Arizona State during the COVID dead era when there were supposed to be no visits taking place, but also her criticisms on social media of the teammates that Daniels left behind when he transferred to LSU. Basically, he said that the offensive lineman didn't block for him and the wide receivers didn't run the right route.
She said that.
And that's why her son failed.
She said that through social media, right.
She said that, yeah, on social media. And I point out at LSU, there had not been that kind of noise, but a source at LSU told me she's still very much an influence in her son's decision-making. But in LSU, she did not have the kind of access to the program that she had at Arizona State that wound up getting the whole coaching staff there fired. So I wrote that column. And all I wrote was what Yahoo Sports and The Athletic reported a couple of years ago that no one seemed to pay attention to, and I thought was relevant since the team was going to be picking this guy, you know, possibly picking this guy to be their quarterback. And so I wrote about it, and it caused this shitstorm on social media from people that only read the headline, that only read what they wanted to see, the typical reaction.
Right.
But I think it was split because a lot of people I heard from who said, you know, I didn't know any of this. I'm glad that you wrote this.
Yeah, me too. I got a lot of that too. I got a lot of the other, you know I did. People were like, why are you allowing this guy to come on the show? I'm like, did you read the actual column? And to your point, if somebody just saw a headline or saw somebody else tweet something, they had this reaction that you were going after Jaden Daniels as the next RG3 because of his family. You were just writing about what had already been reported by The Athletic a few years ago that no one else, for whatever reason, had picked up on here.
Yes, that's all I did. But the reaction finally hit a crescendo when I got a phone message from the PR company representing Jaden Daniels, Denise White. She was very upset, left me a very long message, sent me a very long email, demanding that I give a better picture of the mother. Here was a woman just protecting her son, and I was going after her for no reason. You know, at one point she said, if we're not satisfied with your response, you know, we may have to escalate this. And I had no idea what any of this meant because nowhere in her complaint did she say anything I wrote was wrong.
Right. Well, the other thing is she didn't quite understand that the threat of escalation with you is not a great idea.
Yeah. Well, when I finally did get her on the phone, and, you know, I said, how are you doing? And she said, well, not too good. You know, I'm very upset. I said, before you go on, I should let you know that I'm recording our conversation, which I was. And, in most states, you need two-party permission, so you need to tell them you're recording the conversation. So she said, well, I don't want it recorded. I said, well, I need it recorded for my follow-up column I'm going to do. And she said, well, I don't want a follow-up column. And that was the end of the conversation.
Right.
and that was it.
Well, she was smart. You were smart, and she was smart. I think, you know, because I think I said this to you at the time. If she had been less threatening in her initial correspondence with you, then you probably would have had an off-the-record conversation with her, right?
Yes, yes. But again, that's to me, that's more significant noise than the agent retweeting unhappy stuff about the visit. But it's still, it's not about him. Okay? It's not about what he did. Still. So, if to me, and, you know, the team knows a lot more about the situation than I do, this would not, as a fan, this would not affect, you know, my idea that if I wanted Jaden Daniels before this, I still want him.
Yeah, I think that's important. And you can say that you still feel that maybe Jaden had something to do with the agent's liking of those tweets, but none of this has come from Jaden Daniels. In fact, the only thing that we really have from Jaden Daniels is, you know, this thing that he did with Shannon Sharp and Chad Johnson on this podcast. And, you know, he talked about how the receivers and the supporting cast in Washington, they got some dogs there, he said. He wasn't really allowed to speak much. It was mostly just Chad Johnson and Shannon Sharp talking. But I think that we haven't heard anything directly from him. I would throw out a couple of possibilities about last week. I don't want to spend any more time on last week because some things have happened today reporting-wise that I want to get to. But, you know, it's very possible that the agent and Jaden Daniels and maybe everybody were caught off guard, that the team didn't tell them what the top 30 visit was going to be, that it was going to be a social kind of environment with a lot of other players, including three other quarterbacks, and they'd be spending a lot of time together. And maybe the agent was just upset that he was caught off guard and that he wasn't able to prepare his client for that. I think that's a possibility. I also I also said yesterday, and several people tweeted and said, that actually would be interesting to find out if Jaden Daniels has ever played golf before. But Drake May talked about, you know, he thought he was the best golfer at Topgolf. And he said J.J. McCarthy had a really good golf swing as well. And I just said yesterday, you know, anybody that's ever been asked to do something for the first time in front of a group of people where there are high expectations, perhaps like you, the first time you sung karaoke, and everybody was looking at you when you walked up and they're like, this guy's probably going to knock it out of the park. But if you are, it could be a very awkward moment. Like, I don't know if Jaden Daniels plays golf or not. For all I know, I mean, he grew up in California. He went to school in Arizona. Maybe he's a 3 handicap and he's a great golfer. Now, Drake May did not mention Jaden Daniels in the conversation of the really good golfers at Top Golf, but you know, it's possible that maybe he walked away from that thing feeling, you know, slightly embarrassed or that it was an awkward thing. The other quarterbacks are up there with great golf swings and he's never played golf before. I don't know.
That's a good point though, Kevin. It's a good question to bring up. And I mean, I don't play golf. Okay. But I know it's the language of men these days. Telecommunicate, you know, and I think they assume that, you know, of course these guys would all play golf, and maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but that's a possibility. We're going to talk about that. Like I said, we're going to talk about this Topgolf thing like they went to a strip club, for crying out loud.
You know what? It probably would have been, I don't know, it may have been awkward at a strip club for some of the guys there. you know, my takeaway from last week is that it's mostly a non-issue. You know, there's been reporting from guys like Ralph Vacchione from Fox and somebody else significant. I think it was Jeremy Fowler, said that the two sides have talked since the end of last week and all's been resolved. So the team either reached out to Jaden or his agent or the agent and Jaden. Maybe your girl Denise White reached out to the team to say, ignore that stuff. He's totally fine. He enjoyed himself, you know, but all apparently was resolved. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Now let's get to,
yeah, I didn't think it was a big deal, but everything is a big deal right now, because not just because they have the number to pick and are going to pick a quarterback, but there are choices. There's usually not this many choices available to a team.
Let me just say, some people thought it was a big deal. I mean, I got a lot of social media saying this was the leadership test. This was the alpha test. You know, Washington's playing, you know, chess. Everybody else is playing checkers. And they just figured out that Jaden Daniels isn't an alpha. Okay, you can think that if you want. The one thing I would just suggest to everybody is there's no right way, or I guess wrong way, to do this, but there's no definitive right way to do this. And the results speak for themselves. They are wrong 2/3 of the time they make a draft choice, basically. You know, certainly in the neighborhood of 60% of the time, they are wrong. So I don't know if their way of doing it, which was the 49ers' way of doing it, which was Bill Belichick's way occasionally of doing it, or the traditional come in, we're going to just meet with you, we're going to draw up some plays, we're going to talk some language, hear some cadence, the whole thing. There isn't a defined right way to handle a top 30 visit.
You're right. I think you're right. And you bring up how they get it wrong often. Which speaks to my column that I wrote for tomorrow's paper. And I know this is kind of obvious, but there have been so many screw-ups over the years, we kind of forget what actually really happened in this. When Norv Turner picked Heath Shuler with the number 3 pick in the 94 draft, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, talk about getting it wrong. And I point out in the column that Norv Turner was considered an offensive genius. Certainly more celebrated than Cliff Kingsbury is,
right,
in his role.
Yeah.
You know? And him and Charlie Casserly, they got this really wrong.
Well, Casserly, remember, and he's told me this before, he wanted Dilfer. He preferred Dilfer.
Yes, yeah, I know that. But that was no bargain either.
No, I completely agree. Yeah. It's not like,
yeah.
I mean, Dilfer
he
won a Super Bowl, but
career as a backup.
Yeah.
In the league.
Right.
So I revisit the Heath Shuler stuff just to remind people that nobody knows anything.
All you have to do is go back to the 2021 draft 3 years ago. Trevor Lawrence,
God, yes.
Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, top 15 picks all taken in the 2021 NFL draft. After yesterday, when Zach Wilson got traded to the Broncos for a 7th-round pick, there's only one of those quarterbacks left with the team that picked him, and that's Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. Everybody else is on a new team. And this draft will produce 4 to 6 first-round picks. If it's 6 that are drafted in the first round, four of them will likely be with other teams 3 years from now, either traded or maybe even released and then picked up off waivers. It is the nature of the draft. It is the nature of trying to get it right at that position. It is just so hard to do, and the odds actually favor you'll get it wrong. But you have to try when you don't have one. Couple of reports, Tommy, that I wanted to read real quickly just to catch everybody up to speed on what's going on today. Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofolo from the NFL Network reported that while the Commanders and Patriots have received calls from teams attempting to move up for a quarterback, Washington has shown no indication it would move. New England would move for the right offer, but the Pats just haven't gotten such an offer yet. So Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofalo reporting that teams are calling, but Washington doesn't want to move off of two. Diana Russini had the same thing. Teams trying to move up for quarterback and calling Washington are being told that they are not moving. That's the thing that Adam Peters said at the press conference on Thursday, which you attended. There was this also from Mike Garofalo. He reported, not surprisingly, the Raiders are among the teams who tested the Washington Commanders on moving out of two, even after Washington GM Adam Peters told the media the team planned to stick and pick. So the Raiders, with Antonio Pierce, who had been a part of Jaden Daniels' career at Arizona State, have been among the teams that have reached out to Washington. I think they're sticking at two and picking at two, a quarterback. So that brings me to this. J.J. McCarthy. I had this conversation on radio today after Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus was on, and Sam kind of alluded to J.J. McCarthy flying up boards, and we've heard that from various people. Chris Sims on his podcast said that he has a source that told him that Washington will not be selecting Drake May. John Keim was on with me the other day on the podcast. John thinks right now that his best guess, anyway, is Jaden Daniels at two, but he said to me the other day, he said, if it's not Jaden Daniels, he would favor J.J. McCarthy over Drake May. I thought that was interesting. And I wanted to play something real quickly for you guys. I had this guy, Cole Holcomb, not Cole Holcomb, he's a former player for Washington, Greg Holcomb, on the show about a month and a half ago. Greg Holcomb is one of those quarterback coaches, you know, has a quarterback academy, and he took on J.J. McCarthy in seventh or eighth grade. And has been working with J.J. McCarthy ever since. And he's close with the family. He's close with J.J. McCarthy. And this was like a month and a half ago or so, after the combine and after J.J. McCarthy's pro day in Ann Arbor. But he got into what the family, the father specifically, Jim McCarthy, had been telling him about his visits with Washington. Here's what he told me on the radio show, again, about a month and a half ago. Have you talked to teams about J.J.?
I have not. You know, I'm not dialed in with that. I've been talking to his dad pretty much on a regular basis, and he gives me the scoop on, you know, who he's gone to dinner with and who he's spoken to and what they've said, and it's really crazy, you know. I think when he was in the teens, projected before the NFL combine and his pro day, there wasn't so much of that. And then his stock just skyrocketed, you know, post combine and pro day. So I think there's teams that are moving up trying to get him. I do know that Jim told me there was a very positive conversation with the Washington people at the NFL Combine, and they just said a lot of really nice things about J.J., that he checks all these boxes, and it will be hard for anybody to pass on him. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure they're telling that to a lot of people, and they've probably got to make sure that they're, you know, including everyone. But it sounds like there's a handful of specific teams that are really kind of, you know, in the wheelhouse to grab him.
And you think, based on that, Washington's one of them?
I do. And I would love to see him there. I think, you know, and I don't want to give away too much information, but the family seems like they would be very happy if he landed there. And I'll be honest, there's a handful of cities that they wouldn't be very happy. Like, you can imagine, I'm sure everyone in the draft has got that. They've got their dream cities and programs, and they've got ones that they're like, I would maybe not want to play there. So I can tell you, at number two, I think everybody would be really happy.
So J.J. McCarthy has a preference. You know, he's a quarterback that has places that he wouldn't want to go and places he would like to go. That's kind of nuts, isn't it? Anyway, According to this guy, Greg Holcomb, his lifelong quarterback coach, lifelong family friend, his communications with Jim McCarthy, JJ's father, indicates that, you know, this is a preference. They like Washington. And, you know, Washington could have been telling JJ McCarthy the same things that they're telling other quarterbacks. But I guess what I want to get to is this, Tommy. What would the reaction be on Thursday night if, at number two, Roger Goodell steps to the podium and says, with the second pick in the NFL draft, the Washington Commanders select JJ McCarthy, quarterback, Michigan? I had this debate.
I think most people would be upset. I think it'd be a negative reaction. Not an outrageous negative reaction, because people want to hold back, you know, the idea that, you know, the new owners have already screwed up the biggest decision, one of the biggest decisions they had to make. They won't want to actually deal with that, if that's what they believe.
What decision did they screw up already?
Well, people who would be upset with them picking J.J. McCarthy would think, oh, my God, here they had the number two pick.
That would be the person. I thought you were saying that they've already screwed something up. Okay.
No. That would be the decision that people would say, oh, my God, they screwed this up. You know, one of their first big decisions. I think people still want this to be new and fresh and successful. So while people would be upset, I think it would be a little bit muted.
By the way, there are people that think that they've already screwed up, and that was the hiring of Dan Quinn. There was a lot of pushback.
I know, but it was a small amount.
So I don't think that there would be like some sort of, and you didn't suggest this, but I don't think that there would be a lot of anger if they drafted J.J. McCarthy. I mean, some would suggest that there's been so much, I guess, momentum, so many mock drafts pointing towards, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner and the most exciting college football player in 2023, Jaden Daniels. And there may be a bit of a letdown because people, you know, I think some people are anticipating a 2012 kind of an excitement in 2024, hopefully more long-lasting after 1 year. But I think most fans are kind of where I am to a certain degree. Benefit of the doubt. I think most people are so thrilled that we don't have to suspend reality when we talk about this football team anymore because Dan Snyder owns the team. And they're willing to let these guys, you know, do what they do and judge them on results down the road. But let me just say that for me, this is the one quarterback that would make me a bit skeptical. I'd still support it, you know, and wait to see how it plays out and hope that it plays out and understand that these people know a lot more about this than I do. And I would have some level of trust and hope that they've got the right guys making the choice and that they got it right. But I just don't see J.J. McCarthy as the number two pick in the draft. I know I've said that for months now, but like if they looked at him and said, it's Kirk Cousins, but it's a mobile version of Kirk Cousins or a better version of Brock Purdy, I would say, well, would you take Brock Purdy or Kirk Cousins at number two overall in the draft? Like, number two overall in the draft is a chance to get Patrick Mahomes. That's what you're shooting for at number two in the draft. And I will admit that it would be a stunner if J.J. McCarthy, after watching almost every single one of his games this year, ended up being the number two pick in the draft. But I don't know about all the intangibles, and we've heard that he's off the charts smart and off the charts engaging and a phenomenal leader. I mean, this was the, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the country, a five-star guy, you know, coming out. You know, he played for Jim Harbaugh. He's a national champion. He's a winner. I'm not suggesting at all that he can't play in the NFL. What do I know? But I just don't see how anybody could watch the tape – And again, we don't have a big part of the overall profile of these players, the personal stuff. How anybody could watch the tape and actually decide that J.J. McCarthy should be the pick over Jaden Daniels. I just don't see that. Jaden Daniels, to me, is a number two pick in an NFL draft. He's got that. Drake May is much more of a number two pick in an NFL draft than J.J. McCarthy. Here's a guy, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I don't know if I've mentioned it with Tommy, but I'm sure you've heard this. Here's a guy that in Michigan's biggest game of the year at that point, as the number one team in the country, undefeated, at Penn State in Happy Valley against the number eight team in the country. They're in a one-score game in the second half, and they don't throw the football one time. Not once. And instead decide on three straight third downs to run it and punt it. Who does that? I guess Jim Harbaugh does. And one of the reasons he does is he's got a dominant defense and he's playing a Penn State team with a freshman at quarterback who was terrible last year. I thought he was terrible. I know Penn State people still have high hopes for, what was his name? Drew Aller, I think it was his name. But he never attempted a forward pass in a one-score game that was the biggest game of the year for them at that point. They punted on three straight possessions, choosing to run the ball on third down three straight times and punt it. No one does that. Nobody does that in football. But they did. And again, I'm sure it was like, Penn State can't score. We'll punt it. We'll play field position. We've got a dominant defense. And maybe we'll pick it up running the football. But if you had a lot of trust in your quarterback, I think you try to bury that team that can't score.
Look, I think these are all good points. I didn't watch Michigan nearly as much as you did, but the times that I did, I came away thinking, the best player on this team is Blake Corum.
Yeah. He certainly,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so if the quarterback that you're going to pick number two isn't even the best player on your offense, what does that say?
Well, it says that we don't know how the projection game works. You know, we don't know what they know. We don't know anything about the offense they're going to run. We don't know anything about the kind of environment they want to have. This guy has, we were told right when the season ended, his intangibles are going to jump off at people. He is going to rise from where he is right now. And by the time we get to the end of April, he's going to be a high first round pick. And it looks like he's going to be. Don't know from watching them as college football players how you could possibly pick J.J. McCarthy in front of Jaden Daniels. But I also understand that what I don't know. And they've got all the information and they're the experts. So if it is him, I think the reaction will be mixed, but I don't think it'll be outrage by any stretch of the imagination. I think our fan base
I don't think it will be outrage, but I think people will be quietly upset.
If they think he's the safest pick, like, hey, worst case, we're going to end up with Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy's a starting quarterback in the NFL, and if you put enough around him, you can win with him. And they think that the floor, you know, as it's described, is much lower with Daniels and May and Penix Jr. and Nix, that's fine. But, man, shouldn't they explore a trade back at least a couple of spots? I guess if they're concerned that somebody else feels the same way, then no. Like, if they feel like New England would take J.J. McCarthy or that the Giants would take J.J. McCarthy and that's who they want, no. I still, by the way, think it's going to be Daniels. I still feel very confident it's going to be Jaden Daniels. But I just think it's interesting how in the last couple of days there have been multiple people who have just said, you know, keep an eye out on Washington. You know, all signs point to Daniels, but there could be a surprise here. And then Monson mentioned McCarthy, and Keim kind of alluded to McCarthy. And, you know, I think there's some people out there that believe that they like McCarthy. And by the way, connecting the dots, right? You know, Brock Purdy, Kirk Cousins, San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan, Dan Quinn in Atlanta with Kyle Shanahan. You know, who would Kyle pick? Kyle might be in love with J.J. McCarthy. But then again, Kyle was in love with Trey Lance. And when he had the opportunity to pick Mac Jones, who was more like, you know, Kirk Cousins, I guess, in that draft. He took Trey Lance and traded up and traded a fortune to do so. Anyway, we are in the home stretch here, thankfully, of talking, speculating, and trying to interpret what others are saying about who Washington will take at number two on Thursday night. We've got other things to get to. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Hey guys, most of us are interested in our mental and physical well-being to a certain degree, and with that in mind, I'd like to welcome and introduce a new sponsor to the podcast. The new sponsor is Unified Healing. Unified spelled U-N-I-F-Y-D, Healing. It doesn't matter if you're a big-time world-class athlete or just a somewhat athletic podcaster like me. We all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring the podcast now. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the DMV or anywhere else across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Well, go to unifiedhealing.com/Sheehan to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, spelled U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/Sheehan. No material or testimonies on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Tommy, tell us about Shelley's.
Well, like I said before, on Sunday, I left Nats Park to watch the Caps game at Shelley's back room at 1331 F Street Northwest, because if you can't be at the Caps game, that's pretty much the best place to watch it. I had a great bacon cheeseburger, you know, for an early dinner off their fabulous menu of excellence when it comes to food.
Mm-hmm.
I had a nice Sierra Nevada draft. I had a couple of nice Sierra Nevada drafts. They've got a great beer selection. I had a quality smoke while I was there, surrounded by good friends, camaraderie, a lot of sports fans, a lot of Caps fans, and enjoying the game at the time. And, you know, it's that kind of place. It's a place that makes you feel comfortable, that makes you feel good. And if you really want to feel good, you'll be there on May 6th, Monday night, when Shelley's hosts the Cigars and Curveball fundraiser for the D.C. Grays. I've been posting some of the auction items that will be up for auction. We do a live auction at the event at Shelley's, and that's always a lot of fun. Chris Spira is one of our board members and the general manager of the team. It's a great auctioneer.
He does a great job.
It's always a lot of fun. And we just added a autographed book from Joe Gibbs himself.
Wow.
You know, right on the cover of Joe Gibbs' book, Game Plan for Life, is Joe's autograph right there. So and we've got some other items coming in as well. To find out more, you can go to dcgrays.com to buy tickets for a $100 contribution. And it is a contribution because we're a nonprofit organization. You get three cigars. You get an appetizer and a chance to bid at some of these great items that we've got. Speaking of, we talked about C.J. Abrams. We've got an autographed bat from C.J. Abrams, a future All-Star
awesome.
For the Nationals as well. So the auction's going to be top-notch, maybe the best one we've ever had. This all takes place at the place to be, Shelley's Back Room.
Can't wait for Monday night, May 6th. All right, so there is this story. This story is currently the number one story on ESPN.com, but Caitlin Clark has signed a $28 million contract with Nike, which will include a signature shoe. Now, the $28 million is over an eight-year period. Apparently, there was quite a bidding war to be the shoe company representing Caitlin Clark. It was Under Armour and Adidas who were involved in contract negotiations with Clark. Puma got involved as well. Clark had offers for $16 million over 4 years from Under Armour, $6 million over 4 years from Adidas, so they weren't even close. $16 million over 4 years would have been a better deal in terms of annual, right? That would be $4 million a year versus what she's getting with 28 and 8. She took the longer term and the bigger aggregate deal of $28 million over 8 years with Nike. Tommy, she's, you know, the discussion about, you know, her going back to Iowa, I suggested that Disney just pay her $20 million bucks to go back, that it would have been worth it for the television deals that they would have gotten, the new television deals that they would have gotten. But she's going to make an absolute fortune at the next level as well. It won't come from things like base salary or WNBA compensation. It's going to come from all of these endorsements. And the other endorsements will follow her as well. State Farm, etc. But $28 million, 8 years, including a signature shoe for Caitlin Clark. So there you go.
Now, is this a girl shoe?
Is it it's a basketball shoe.
So girls and guys, same shoe.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I guess so.
They have
women's shoes,
yes,
and they have men's shoes.
That's true. That is true. I don't know the answer to that.
Neither do I. I mean, because I think it'd be kind of cool to have a Caitlin Clark sneaker.
I'm going to look up Nike basketball shoes and see if they're... Yeah, there's men's basketball shoes and women's basketball shoes.
Yeah
of course.
So,
the big difference primarily is in the color offerings, it looks like.
Uh-huh. Well, I would think that they would offer a men's version, and some men would be interested in having a Caitlin Clark sneaker.
Yeah. That dude Greg Doyle might be really interested in having a Caitlin Clark shoe. Did you see that guy?
Yeah, you know, I don't know Greg Doyle personally. He's a very good columnist in Indianapolis.
He is?
He's written some great columns. He was a bit of a hothead. I forget who he wrote for, CBS Sports or...
Yeah, I remember
somebody
that.
Before
yes,
that.
Yes.
And he was a bit of a lightning rod before, but he went to Indianapolis, kind of settled down, became a really excellent columnist there, and I'm sure he really regrets blurting that out at the moment.
Well, for those
I'm sure he thought it was funny.
Yeah, for those that don't know, in her first press conference, the introductory news conference in Indianapolis after she got drafted by the Indiana Fever, this guy, Greg Doyle, I do remember him as kind of a college football and college basketball writer. College basketball writer primarily, I think, with CBS Sports. I could be wrong about that. But I do remember him being a little bit of a controversial writer. In fact, you know what? For whatever reason, I could be wrong about this. Did he used to go on with Zabe all the time?
I don't know.
It might be a different guy.
I don't know if he did or not.
He was in the press questioning area at the press conference, and he held up the heart signal, you know, that she gives to her family and her family gives back to her, you know, at the end of games. And Caitlin Clark said, "You like that?" And he said, Greg Doyle said, "I like that you're here. I like that you're here." And she said, "I do that at my family after every game." So, Doyle said, "Start doing it to me and we'll get along just fine." And it was very awkward. It was very, you know, creepy. I mean, how old is Greg Doyle? Is he at least 50? I'm going to guess. If he's in his 40s.
I don't know, maybe.
Whatever. She's 22 years old.
Quickly apologize.
Yeah, he did. He did. He wrote a column, too, apologizing. Yeah. And, man, you like this guy, Greg Doyle.
I thought he's written some really good columns.
Okay.
Out in Indianapolis.
Who's the big Indianapolis star columnist? Isn't there a guy out there that's been there forever?
Bob Kravitz. He's not there anymore.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. Who was also a very good columnist as well. I know neither of these gentlemen myself.
Right.
I only know about their work. What I didn't understand is why I was reading about a column about Greg Doyle in the Washington Post.
What do you mean?
Candace Buckner, who used to work with Greg Doyle and once was good friends with him, wrote a column about the whole thing.
And?
And I'm sitting there thinking, why am I reading about this in the Washington Post? Why would I care about this?
So
I just thought it was a strange choice of a column, given the stuff that's going on with the football team, given the baseball team started the season, given the Caps are in the playoffs. I thought there was, I just thought it was a strange subject matter. And as a regular reader of the Washington Post, my first inclination was, why am I reading this?
Well, to me, it would be pretty obvious why you would be reading that. That anything, you know, about Caitlin Clark is drawing eyeballs and readers. That would be the reason. More so than
almost anything else. Most columnists don't make their decisions about what they write based on eyeballs.
I understand that, but are you saying that you don't write about other columnists? Like, suggested that there were better things to write about. I'm just saying, okay, but not in terms of drawing the biggest audience to your column. Right now, I mean, I'm surprised you haven't written three columns about Caitlin Clark yet.
I'm going to write about those shoes if Nike doesn't have a Caitlin Clark men's shoe for me.
Greg Doyle was at CBSSports.com for a while, and he did, listen to this, I think this is the same guy, he did a Sunday morning sports talk show at WLW, I think that's Cincinnati, with Ken Brew. Ken Brew.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Ken Brew from Channel 9.
Channel 9. Yeah.
Yes.
It's got to be the same guy. It's an odd last. It is the same guy. I'm looking at the picture of him right now. What years? It had to be like the 80s. It was after Glenn Brenner. Well, it would have been the 90s after Glenn Brenner passed away.
Yeah, it was the 90s. Because when I started covering sports, Ken Brew was there.
Yeah. You know who followed Glenn Brenner after he suddenly passed away, very sadly passed away, because Glenn's my all-time favorite local sportscaster. Sorry, Buck. Buck's my 1A. But even Buck loved Brenner. Brenner was my number one. You know who replaced him when he passed away, within like a year after he passed away?
Warner Wolf?
Exactly. Warner Wolf came back to D.C.
And it was a situation of you can't go home again.
It's true. It did not work.
Yeah.
The second go-round.
Yeah.
I mean, for those of you of a certain age, you know who we're talking about. For those of you younger, Warner Wolf was the first big sports personality in D.C. He did Channel 9 sports in the 70s. And he became a national sports guy because he was so popular in Washington that he got high. And he's from Washington. He went to Coolidge. My mother is in his class at Coolidge. He went to New York and then had a long career in New York.
Yes.
And then
he was on Imus a lot of times.
I think that was long after he had been a prominent on-air sports figure in New York. I think Imus made him a part of his show, Tommy, probably like in the early 2000s, I want to say.
Oh, I think before that.
You do?
I think it was in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ken Brew. Yeah. That's him. So Greg Doyle and Ken Brew hosted a show together. All right. Do you have anything else?
I got nothing else for you, boss.
All right. You going to watch the hockey game at Shelley's tonight or at home?
I'm going to watch it here at home.
Can I interest you?
Or maybe
you?
I'll go to my Frederick hangout, Quartermasters.
Can I interest you in checking out Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight, one of the next two or three major superstars in the game? He's already beaten Phoenix once.
By the way, you know who the general manager was in Denver when they drafted Jokic?
Yes.
Tim Connelly.
Yeah, exactly. It was Tim Connelly.
You know who the general manager is in Minnesota now?
Tim Connelly.
Tim Connelly.
Yeah. He was in.
He worked for the Wizards.
Yes, he. And by the way, was a listener to the station. Okay, we done?
I think so.
I think
pushed it too far. You asked me to watch an NBA playoff game.
You didn't even respond. I mean, you just completely.
I think I did.
Well, no, you changed the subject actually.
I think that was my response.
I think you should watch it now that you know that Tim Connelly picked him. You seemed kind of excited about that. I'll be back tomorrow, probably with Jay Gruden as my guest tomorrow. Have a good evening. Go Caps!